B-Pod Studios.
Toucher and Rich.
Good morning, guys. How's everyone today?
Oh, it's just a day after day of delight.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Five of Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich, and I have been told that if you go to twitch.tv right now /sportshub, I believe, we have the Joe Murray just sitting there cam. So if you just want to watch a video of Joe Murray just sitting there by himself in the studio, then by all means, you're the star of Twitch this morning, Joe.
Yeah, so I can do some dancing, dance moves.
I'd love to see that. Let's see you forklift yourself out of that chair.
Let's make some magic happen this morning, Joe Murray. You are the lone man on the old Twitch, twitch.tv/sportshub, I believe is how you get there. Nick's probably... And how about that?
Rich, you've seen my dance moves, dude.
Oh, dude, they're smooth as hell. They are smooth as hell. They're legitimately good.
Got to get the airplane going first and foremost.
No. So there you go. You've got something to look at there at Twitch after the weeks of an empty studio. You've got Joe Murray just sitting there. And I wanted to play this today because it sets up something we need to discuss in sometime later on in this hour. Let's get to one of our favorite Brookline 911s.
There's someone on roller skates.
There's a rabbit on my driveway that's... I don't know what's going on with it, but it's just sitting there.
Everyone's angry in Brookline. Everyone's feeling stressed.
Oh.
Where the people there are surly, and the average age is dead.
What is that?
There is a man taking a poop.
He's having a good time, because everyone's angry in Brookline.
I have a turkey that came into my house and is sitting in my kitchen.
Brookline Police Dispatch.
Hi. I'm just wondering. I live across from the park, and I was just, like, sitting in my apartment, and there's a girl with a blue baseball cap on and two guys.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. They look Indian.
Okay.
And they-
well, right now... You know something's amiss.
Like Native American or
not Indian, sure.
Like,
we're being invaded. Look out.
You mean to tell me in Brookline or Newton there are Indian people?
You know, they looked Indian.
But, well, I got to tell you that it's very rare in these communities to find someone of Indian descent. They look Indian. Oh, yeah? Well, so does everyone in my kids' school. Come on.
With a blue baseball cap on and two guys, like, I don't know, they look Indian.
Okay.
And they are walking dogs back and forth in front of the apartment. Stop. And then they keep walking back. Stop. Back and forth, back and forth. And they're taking them out of this silver, like, BMW, like, you know, hatchback or whatever. And so I'm looking out, and I'm like, can you stop pulling the dog like that, walking him back and forth?
First of all, all the people...
Wait, was it multiple dogs or was it just one dog?
No, there's one dog. They, how many times have you gone, darn it, Indian, quit walking that dog back and forth?
Was the leash a little too tense? Like,
well,
too
I mean, if you see a couple Indians walking a dog back and forth, I mean, what are you going to do?
You got to call the cops.
I mean, the
radar beam that goes off. All right.
In and out of the BMW.
God.
First of all, the BMW gives them a And second of all, they're Indian.
They're obviously ruffians.
Exactly.
Are they trafficking this dog?
Three Indians in a BMW walking a dog back and forth. I mean, if anything would scare the bejesus out of you, it's got to be that.
So I'm listening. Like, okay, I'm ready for the other shoe to drop.
Right.
So they're walking this dog.
Back and forth, though, Rich.
Back
and ominously.
In a park.
Right.
Yep. Right, and it's, instead of going in concentric circles, they're just going to and fro.
Right. So I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Like that, it's probably like bothering his neck. And he goes, we're training them to be service dogs. And then he starts...
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine?
There's like a plausible explanation.
Right, so these are like good human beings.
Right, yeah.
Training them to like help out the
unfortunate. Like the payoff of the story is like, oh, here's a completely reasonable explanation of why they're doing it, too.
Right. So I've given you the explanation. It's something that probably a good human being would do.
Well,
I still got a problem.
Rich, dogs, you just need to talk to them. Sit down with a coffee and have a good conversation with them to become a service dog. There is no training involved at all.
So it's the same woman who called about the mailman.
Who knows?
Oh, it could be.
Does sound like the mailman lady.
Oh, come on. It all sounds the same. It just bothers some pricks. Walking a dog to and fro. We'll be right there. We'll send the SWAT team.
And he goes, we're training them to be service dogs. And then he starts, yeah, and then I'm like, I don't like think like the dog likes you, pulling him back and forth, stopping him abruptly and pulling him back.
She's Dr. Doolittle. She's communicated with the dog.
Right, not the first time she's spoken to an animal.
Yeah. I've spoken to the dog. He don't like being walked to and fro.
Nice.
The dogs like almost a pentagram. Kind of thing, because they are tools of the devil. Give me a nice circle and a whatever the hell's in the pentagram. My next tattoo.
Pulling him back and forth, stopping him abruptly and pulling him back. And then he starts going to me, you a veterinarian? Are you married? Are you? I think they're kind of rude.
Yeah. Well, then rudeness, if nothing else, is to get the police involved. And
she sounds like the kind of woman who lives alone, so it's probably not married.
Feelings police. Yes. How can we help you?
Yeah. You think yes. She lives alone, Bert? Yeah. I would guarantee that by a million. I mean, she's sitting in her apartment, and it's obviously during the day. I mean, they're not out there at the crack, at midnight, walking the dog around. She's just peering out her window, looking for something to get pissed off about.
I'd set the over-under at, like, six cats living in her apartment.
That's not a bad guess, I would imagine.
Are you married? Are you? I think they're kind of rude. Okay. And why are they doing that?
So your concern is that these...
I mean, it's hot out, and they're taking dogs out of, like, these hot cars and...
All right, hang on a second. Everyone knows when it's hot out, dogs, you should stay inside.
That's right. Keep them in the car.
With the windows closed. Yes.
Right. There's
keep
nothing,
them in the car.
There's nothing, nothing worse for a dog than being outside. They're not, well, Rich, you joke, but they're not built for being outside. You know, animals throughout the ages, Rich, yes. If you didn't know, mm-hmm. since caveman times, were sealed in a cave and not allowed to. There's nothing my dog likes more than being in the house all day. It's a magical time. Yeah, I like the crap and pee that's all over the place. It's fantastic.
I mean, it's hot out, and they're taking dogs out of, like, these hot cars and walking them back and forth and trying.
Wait, they're taking the dogs out of the hot cars? Well, miss, you've got me there. I mean, let them sit in the hot car. And by the way, the hot car, like, they're taking them out of the hot car? We don't believe in air conditioning. We like it as unpleasantly warm as possible. In fact, we've been sitting in... We sat in the car for an hour before we dare take off with this animal.
I just, every time I hear these, I think, imagine being the cop who gets this call.
See, the cop, it's sucks.
Didn't they, like, play them back, like when they're hanging out and stuff? Like, do you think, oh, you got to listen to this one?
Oh, well, yes. As I said, I've got some insiders who want to go unnamed. Who are thankful that we do this segment so people know what they go through on a daily basis.
I had to call 911 a couple weekends ago, and they did not, and I had a very legitimate reason, and they did not indulge me at all like this. The Brookline dispatches are...
Saints.
Are saints. The idea that they're indulging, I was cut off immediately and sent to some line.
Training them. I didn't like his attitude either. I think he was kind of rude.
Okay, where are you now, ma'am?
I'm in my apartment. I'm just looking out.
Okay,
I'm just concerned about the welfare of these dogs.
Sure, sure.
It's like hot out.
Sure.
And the other one just looked up at the apartment.
Oh, well.
Uh-oh.
Was it a threatening look?
It's laser eyes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know about these Indians. They look at your apartment and there's all going to hell's to pay. Couple of Indian folk.
Don't forget the woman in the blue ball cap.
That's right.
Yeah.
Her I'm not so concerned about. It's these two Indian fellas that I feel are the real culprits here.
And the other one just looked up at the apartment. Oh my God! And they're doing it to antagonize me.
I got an idea. Shut the blinds.
Don't look outside.
Yeah, stop looking out the window.
Maybe feed the three cats.
So you went out and bitched at them for walking around a service dog, and then they dare look up at your apartment because you're a psycho. I mean, wow, they looked up at me. Oh, I wonder why. And then maniac.
And then they started training the service dog in a park.
Well, I mean, you know, you're supposed to do it in the middle of 95.
This guy with a gray. No, I don't want to give my name.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, it's just.
Yeah, I don't want to give my name because these Indians are going to go nuts on me. We all know that.
She doesn't trust
you ever
the
back
she
of a
she thinks the police are going
to
leak.
Do you ever see the back of a dollar bill? It's all Indians trying to. It's all secret code. They run the world from a mountain in Colorado.
This guy with a gray. No, I don't want to give my name.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, it's just like they're, like, keep walking them back and forth in front of the apartment, and they're making them heel. Stop. Okay. They're, like, really rude. And it's hot out. They shouldn't be doing that in a hot day.
Okay.
Can you just have a policeman check them out?
Sure.
I don't want them throwing a rock through my window or anything like that.
Well, that's
a rational thought.
That's a good leap in logic. Is that
well? Didn't the tone like make it sound like that had happened before, though? Right.
Right.
I don't want the rock going through my window.
Well, I mean, how many times?
There's a rock.
I don't know, lady. You kind of deserve it now.
Yeah, I know.
To be quite honest.
Well, if there's anything I know, Indian dog trainers notorious for rock throwing. I mean, that is something that, listen, we make fun of these calls sometimes. If I see a couple Indian fellas training a dog,
watch
look out windows.
Rocks.
I mean, look out. I mean, they're picking up rocks and hucking them like no one's business. It's almost biblical, the stonings that are going on.
I can just see, like, her walking away from the window for a second and then looking out and they're staring all of a sudden. It's like, oh, and she closes it back.
I don't want to give my name. Because I know that there is an intelligentsia that is out there.
Did they do that, ma'am?
What? No. But I'm afraid if I give my name or anything, they will. They'll probably be irritated that I even call the police on them.
Okay. Well, I have your concerns, and we'll pass it along. Thank you for letting us
will
know.
Will somebody check it out?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, thank God. You very much.
Oh,
thank
these
you.
Poor
Bye-bye.
People. Oh, my God. The poor cop that has to go by.
I don't know. If I'm a cop, that's kind of like a... You know, you take your time. Yeah. You get to have lunch.
Stop at Dunk's on the way over.
There's really no urgency to getting over there.
Because you know she's looking at you in the window while you're doing it all.
Yeah, but I don't have to deal with her. She won't give her name.
I don't know. They look Indian.
Jeez. I'll tell you, these Indians, you never know which way.
I'm like, can you stop pulling the dog like that, walking him back and forth?
It's rather abrupt, sir.
Can you imagine, like, you have an apartment, like, looking out at a park, I would imagine that's not inexpensive. And part of the appeal is the park, and what you've done is you've turned it into a spectator sport.
Are you married?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Are you married?
Yeah.
Then go bother your husband.
I'm in my apartment. I'm just looking out.
Okay.
Yeah, park surveillance from that apartment.
There is not a chance in hell she's not wearing a house coat. She is in a house coat like you wouldn't.
What's
you,
a house
you wouldn't
coat?
Believe. It's a like a drapery.
Yeah.
That has a hole in it.
The pattern is everything. The pattern is everything.
It looks,
yes.
Like a, it looks like a rug.
Yeah,
like,
no, yeah. My grandmother used to wear one of those.
If you ever read the Brothers Grimm,
yeah,
it's what every woman in the Brothers Grimm is wearing.
It's true.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911, and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is not your conventional sports radio show.
It's a lot of fun, right? You're having fun.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
When he made a decision, to me, it wasn't like the end of the world or like, oh, man. Like, he's a free agent. When free agency hits, there's always a chance that guys can go to other teams. So I'm happy for him. Played 20 years for one organization. The knowledge he's passed down, how open he has always been with guys, learning from him, asking him questions, always so open, great teammate. You become a free agent, that's what our league is about. That's what players before us have fought for, be a free agent and choose. I was happy for him if he did what makes him happy.
Tom.
98.5 of Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich, and Jeff Howe covers the Patriots for TheAthletic.com, and he joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. That, by the way, was the voice not of Jeff Howe, but of Devin McCourty, saying in an interview that it's not that big of a deal to him that Tom Brady's gone. And to that, I bring in Jeff Howe to ask him. First of all, he wrote an excellent article, which we'll talk about in just a second, about this rookie, Anthony Jennings, and just what a crazy road he's had to get where he is. But first, so when you hear Devin McCourty kind of downplaying Tom Brady being gone, and then I saw an article from a different website, I think it was Bill Barnwell, who wrote that he ranked the NFL off seasons. Now, we know that, you know, it's whoever wins the offseason is usually not the one who wins the season. But, I mean, the Pats are at the bottom. It's like the Patriots and the Texans, he ranks them as having the worst offseasons. What's your opinion on that? I know they lost, obviously, Tom Brady. But was it that bad? Did they have the worst offseason in the NFL?
Well, to compare them to the Texans is pretty cruel, because I think the Texans went out of their way to, like, purposely make their team worse. Like, their offseason was like the fake punt in the playoffs of offseasons. The Patriots' offseason was, I mean, by their standards, I mean, you're not going into this season realistically expecting a Super Bowl, which is basically the first time that's happened in, like, 19 years. So they lost Tom Brady, and the negotiations were never nearly as close to coming to fruition as we all sort of assumed they would. And then not only that, you know, Rob Gronkowski decides that he does want to play again, but it can't be with you. So it was not a good offseason, but, I mean, McCourty's reaction is 10 years playing for Belichick, a few years playing for Greg Schiano, and even his coach in high school was pretty blunt about the way he coached the McCourty's. So I can see that being his reaction, and he's seen the business side of it all a couple times himself. So, you know, I certainly am not surprised to hear McCourty react that way.
Is there any kind of benefit that you see to having what's going on right now with, like, a potential disruption in the season and there being maybe no fans in the stands? Does that benefit the Patriots at all?
That's a good question. I think if you put, like, right now, not being able to have the in-person 9-week off-season workout plan is really going to disrupt a lot of teams, the teams that aren't well coached. So right there, having Bill Belichick is like having a cheat card, because that was not unintentional. People are going to take that the wrong way. But having Bill Belichick being able to prep his team through a situation like this. I mean, think of all the adversity that the Patriots have dealt with over the years. You know, some of it was self-inflicted, but being able to minimize or handle distractions there's nobody even close to as good as Belichick has been with that sort of stuff. And I think he's going to be able to, like, you compare it to the offseason in the transition from 2010 to 2011, which was shortened by the labor negotiations. You know, Belichick went from having a classic 3-4 type of defense for almost the entire 2000s decade into saying, you know what, I don't have the time to teach that right now. I can't install that for this team. So they played more of a 4-3 in 2011. So I think you're going to see Belichick say, I can't do this right now without the benefit of, you know, what I would normally put these guys through and I think they'll adapt and change better. But then, you know, ultimately, in terms of the competitive balance and how they're going to be able to execute that when the season starts, it's really going to come down to how good the quarterback can play to keep them afloat or alive for the playoffs.
But also, Wallach made a great point, and I'll give him credit because I wrote it down, and he rarely makes good points, so I remembered this one, is that if for some reason the season were to start with no fans, I'm looking at these first 4 weeks of games, and you've got, Dolphins, which, okay, let's see, you got at Kansas
Seattle
City
and at Kansas City, which are really tough places to play, and if you're telling me they're going to limit fans in both those places, advantage Jarrett Stidham, who doesn't have to go into such a hostile environment this time.
Yeah, no doubt. And it sounds like, by the way, everything's being governed out in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, fans in Seattle for that game is incredibly unlikely. So that's a huge boost. The problem there is you still have to play the Seahawks and you still have to play the Chiefs. And those teams are still really, really good. Now, I think the Patriots, their defense, you know, they're a little different. They're missing, obviously, Kyle Van Noy, who was their best pass rusher last year, their second best pass rusher the 2 years prior to that, and Jamie Collins, who at times was a game-changing player. So that's not going to make things any easier. But aside from those two guys, and then you're going to like some of the rookies. I think you're going to see some real growth from Chase Winovich. You know, I think that defense still has the potential to be a top-five scoring defense. So, you know, you reduce the crowd noise and what that could do to a young quarterback or a young offense and say, if that defense can play to that level, especially early in the season, you know, maybe you give a guy like Stidham a puncher's chance.
Also, Jeff, and regardless of who the head coach is, I would think continuity matters more than a lot of things for NFL teams during this offseason. Patriots, they have changed the quarterback, but they got a lot of the same guys back from last year. They're not going through a transition phase elsewhere up and down the roster. Doesn't that benefit them?
Yeah, I agree with that, too. Just you don't have to learn each other as much. And so they have a ton of leadership, especially on defense. You got some leadership still left over on offense, despite, you know, losing the big guy there. But continuity and then coaching at the top is that certainly benefits the Patriots more than probably almost every team in the NFL.
All right, Jeff, we're all trying to learn about these rookies, but you wrote a story that is on The Athletic. I don't know if you published it last night or this morning, but I read it, and their new rookie, Anthony Jennings, has essentially gone through hell to get where he is right now. And it's a story I had no idea about. But can you kind of just paint a picture as to, like, you know, what this dude has gone through to get where he is now?
Yeah, it's remarkable. And some people, I think, saw the injury when it happened, the 2018 Sugar Bowl. So at the end of the 2017 season, Alabama, Clemson in the national semifinal down in New Orleans. Basically in garbage time, 3 minutes to go, Alabama was wrapping up a 24-6 win. Anthony Jennings got leg whipped and hit the ground. It looked on the surface like he had torn a ligament, and the more that they monitored him throughout the night, and then the next morning, they had to get him straight to the hospital. They checked out, they got an arteriogram to check the way his arteries were responding. He started to lose some blood flow in the leg, and they had to get him in immediately for surgery in Birmingham the next day. And all of that was to prevent him from losing his leg. And the rest of that feature was one of my favorite features I've ever put together, just because of the amount of information I got. I've never had a story where I've more thoroughly reported on an injury situation. And that was because I got the trainer down at Alabama who walked me through the whole process. Nick Saban was really good for it. Got a couple of his high school coaches who have remained close to him and his family for the majority of his life or a good portion of his life, to really add some color and some perspective to the story and the process of everything Jennings had to go through. So that was it was a wild one to write, and I was excited to get it out there this morning.
So there's two different ways of looking at this. There's the human side, which it's an amazing story, and he's got grit, and the way he came back, and I'm sure that's the kind of stuff that, you know, got Belichick excited. But then there's also the GM side of it, and that is, from what you learned about that injury, how much do you think that will affect his play now that he's here?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because he fell in the draft. He fell to number 87 because people were scared of the unknown. This is a unique injury. It was something that Alabama's trainer, who was entering his 31st season in college football, has never seen before, and he'll probably never see again. And again, a lot of those details are in the story. I mean, his quote at the end of the first section was like, you know, you've seen some injuries, you know the path, you know how they recover from them. This one was a total unknown. It was, all right, we got to land this thing on the moon. Now we got to figure out how we're going to do it. And I thought that summed it up perfectly, because this was uncharted territory. But this trainer, Jeff Allen, knows that knee better than anybody on the planet. And he assured me that Anthony Jennings' knee is structurally sound at this point. It's something he's never going to have to worry about. And I think teams with the lack of opportunities to really evaluate players because of the circumstances before this draft, aside from their time with him at the combine, you know, they probably weren't as confident. You say, all right, well, do I want Anthony Jennings, or do I want somebody who I'm a lot more confident about is healthy? And the Patriots were able to jump on Jennings. I mean, this is a guy who at one point had first round projections, and then he blew up his knee and it was a 2-year recovery. And he came back in the 2018 season. He played the very first game 8 months to the day after the injury against Louisville. But he went through that entire 2018 season. He wasn't himself. And then 2019, he played a lot more like himself. He looked basically, he felt normal again. And I think because he has basically been reconstructed, you're only going to see the best from him going forward. I think it's different in comparison to an ACL, where sometimes those knees just never fully heal. Whereas the way Jeff Allen termed it, he used the word miracle 3 different times while discussing the fact that there was no other structural damage aside from a laceration to a blood vessel and then the damage to the artery. No torn ligaments, no nothing. It was just you had to repair those two things, which are extremely serious, and if they go undetected for a long period of time, could have been life-threatening and obviously leg-threatening, limb-threatening. But once they got through that rehab phase and he got the strength back in the knee and all that other stuff, I mean, he's good to go. So the Patriots potentially got a really good player in the third round.
Well, it's a great story. Let's just hope it's not another season with an injured rookie that you got to sit and talk about. But, I mean, it is it's inspiring. It's good. It's at theathletic.com, of course. Jeff Howe, the man behind it. Jeff, good talking to you, and I hope your day isn't ruined that Maroon 5 canceled their concert at Fenway. I know you're a big fan.
Oh, well, that's not the news I was looking for.
the 5! There's not going to be any more shirtless hunks hanging out there unless, of course, Vince Neil shows up still, and then we can only pray that he takes his shirt off. It would be the comedy moment of the season. All right, well, Jeff.
The DVR and that Super Bowl performance.
Of course, of course. All right, Jeff, we'll talk to you soon. All right, 617-779-0985. It is the headlines with Mr. Just Sitting There, Joe Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Our only concern is your condition.
Rich.
This guy is a piece of work, huh?
Toucher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Early in my career, we're playing against Chicago. And you're going to go 110% because you're trying to impress your vets on your team.
Miller around a Stepanovich screen, turns a corner down the lane, lays it in, foul called. Reggie Miller scores.
In the first half, I played well, and I was riled up. And MJ didn't shoot the ball particularly great. So I was like, yeah, you're Michael Jordan, the guy that walks on water, you know? He looks at me.
Michael Jordan at the foul line. line, comes up shooting, good.
Second half, I had like 2 points. He ended up with a lot more. He was like, don't ever talk trash to Black Jesus. And that's when I stopped referring to him as Michael Jordan, and I always refer to him either as Jordan, Black Jesus, or that black cat. I never called him Michael Jordan again after that.
.95 Sports Hub, it is Toucher and Rich. That is from the second to last episode, which aired last night, along with the final episode of The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary. And I thought about Joe Murray during that, who is with us in studio, or he's actually in studio there. If you go to twitch.tv/sportshub, you can see him just sitting there. What's that? Oh, in the Town Fair Tire studio, he is sitting just sitting there.
Yes.
But I thought about Joe Murray because one of the reasons I've loved this is, first of all, it's just 90s nostalgia just all crammed in there. I mean, at one point you had Leonardo DiCaprio fresh off of like the Titanic movie there with the rest of his P-word posse.
No, Man in the Iron Mask, Rich.
Of course, which was one of his follow-ups after that.
Right.
And just in awe of Michael Jordan. But I forgot like a million things that happened during that time. And one of the storylines that they had that with Joe Murray, I thought about you, was during the finals, and this was 97, right? The 97 finals? After game 3, Dennis Rodman went missing.
That was 98. That was
the 98 one. Okay.
Yeah.
Dennis Rodman went missing. And unexcused. Nobody knew where he was. And it ends up that he left. And once again, this is between games 3 and game 4 of the finals. Mm-hmm. Dennis Rodman, later on that night, showed up on the WCW as a member of the New World Order.
In Michigan.
And came out with Hulk Hogan and missed practice to do that.
Yeah.
They showed video of him like sitting together with, it was like Eric Bischoff and like Hulk Hogan, and they're partying on this couch, and of course Carmen Electra's right along with, just oblivious to everything. Carmen Electra has no idea there's even the finals going on. So they're all sitting there on this couch. Can you imagine if that happened today? He missed practice, and Phil Jackson, you know, he knew just how valuable Dennis Rodman was. So when they asked him about it, he was just like, yeah, man, he's not excused. We're going to be fine.
Yeah.
He's not here. And they're like, how does it feel to be a distraction? He goes, it's a distraction for you. It's not a distraction for us. And sure enough, so Rodman comes back and I guess has a killer game. Like, I mean, ends up, you know, I forget how many rebounds he got, but it was ridiculous. Yeah. And he did pretty well. And he like hit two clutch free throws at the end of the game as well. And so there was a scene afterwards where, of course, all of the press wants to talk to Dennis Rodman. And how they were able to get the cameras in there, it was one of the better scenes of the entire documentary. How many press members they say were waiting for?
300.
There were 300 people from the press waiting for him outside this door, but there was this secret exit that I guess no one knew about that they were going to try to get Rodman through on. And so they go down all these like hallways and the camera's right along with them. And it's like two security guys and Dennis Rodman. And he walks out this door. Now you have to understand the door he walks out of. If you look to the right, you can see way down the hall, the scrum of 300 people from the press. One of them sees Rodman walking out this door, and it becomes the running of the bulls. It's like they just start storming down this hallway, up these stairs. The camera guy who's filming Rodman can't even keep up with Rodman. And like he just ends up getting engulfed in all these people. And the next thing you know, Rodman gets in a car and is gone. Can you imagine that happening today? Where is Dennis Rodman? Or where is name any player?
So guys, this was big. I mean, obviously, you know, if you guys were wrestling fans, you were in Georgia or Atlanta at the time, I believe. But
where that was all going down, home of the WCW.
Exactly.
My wife interviewed for a job at the WCW.
And you know what? Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, but this was right in the middle of the Hogan heel turn, was it not?
Yeah, so they had the third man, and then that's what created the NWO. The third man was Hulk Hogan. He turned heel, exactly. But what they wanted to do, and you can actually watch all this at the WWE Network, Dennis Rodman became a member of the NWO. He actually wanted to wrestle. Well, check this out. Eric Bischoff, who was running WCW at the time, Diamond Dallas Page was friendly with Karl Malone. So they actually had a pay-per-view. It was Hulk Hogan teaming with Dennis Rodman versus Diamond Dallas Page and Karl Malone. And I guess Karl Malone wanted to be a wrestler more than a basketball player growing up.
How did I forget all of that? That was why Diamond Dallas Page kept getting hit with the chair.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. That's right. I remember this. Yeah.
But guys, this was huge. And you got to remember at the time, WWE was kind of fading. They had these like clown characters, and I don't want to make it a wrestling thing, but the thing that WCW, what made it great was they brought reality into it. And there was beef. I mean, they played in how many, what, finals games together? They were two of probably the better power forwards at the time. And, you know, one won a championship and one couldn't in Karl Malone. They brought that reality to wrestling, that storyline, and they both could pull it off in the ring. It was awesome entertainment at the time.
Okay. So that was, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe this predates it by a year or two, but I believe that era of wrestling, when the WCW all of a sudden started getting more viewers than the WWE, that the WWE just went nuts. And that's when the Attitude Era started,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
They went over the top with like sex. They went over the top with like violence. That's when Stone Cold was like the guy.
Yep.
But meanwhile, on the other side of it, you had Hogan, you had Goldberg, who was massive at that time, but that was the more family-friendly one. And you look at some of that stuff from the Attitude Era, and you're like, how did they put this on TV? Like, some of it was, like, so unbelievably over the top that I can't believe they were able to do that.
Yep.
And so were you, like, more of a WWF at the time? Were you more of a WWF guy, or were you a WCW
guy? I loved WWF, but it got boring. The Doink the Clown characters, these Duke the Dumpster Drosies, and then all of a sudden, WCW is bringing out, you know, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, and like they're all like smoking cigarettes, and like, you know, it was cool. And like I said, Hulk Hogan turned heel. You know, he's like playing the Jimmy Hendrix.
Hollywood.
You know?
That's right, he was Hollywood.
It is insane how they were on top of the world, and like 2 years later, they went out of business.
Well, they were on top for 83 weeks. They were the number one show on television for 83 weeks, for, you know, literally in the world, the number one rated show. And then something popped off. WWE Stone Cold came out. Stone Cold 316 says, "I just whipped your ass," and boom, that changed the whole entire thing.
So I was in a music video with Diamond Dallas Page. Like, Diamond Dallas Page was really good friends with these guys called Stuck Mojo, and they were big into wrestling, and they turned into Fozzy. So, I mean, the guys from Stuck Mojo are Fozzy, which is Chris Jericho's band. And the guitarist and I lived together for a long time. And so, like, I was in, and so I got to spend a decent amount of time with Diamond Dallas Page, and they all worked out right next to where I lived down there. And I am convinced, if you watch the movie The Wrestler, do you remember The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke?
Yep.
That is a mix between Jake the Snake, and I think he studied Diamond Dallas Page's like look, because the way that he, like, the stuff that he wore and the way that he walked and talked, it was the life of Jake the Snake, but almost with the mannerisms of DDP. And that's why it's the biggest shock that he's now like some multimillionaire because of this DDP yoga. He might have been one of the last people I would have ever expected to like become something bigger than wrestling. And he was the guy. Because at the time, you're like, oh, dude, this guy's just kind of ragged out. And, you know, and he was with Kimberly, I think, at the time, too. Jeez, I know way too much about this guy.
Wait, was it Diamond Dallas Page like a bouncer at a strip club that some wrestlers came into, and they're like, "Oh, we like your look," and eventually he became a wrestler that way?
Exactly. Yeah, he was a manager at first for the Diamond Stud, who was Razor Ramon or Scott Hall, and then eventually he started working his character as a wrestler. But yeah, this Dennis Rodman thing put DDP on the map, and you can watch this. It's all over the WWE Network today because of everything that was talked about in last night's documentary.
I'm watching that documentary, and I'm thinking, how was he not my favorite player back in the day? Rodman was such an awesome, unashamed maniac. Like, a maniac. And the fact that I just love every time that Carmen Electra's on there, she has no idea what's going on. Like, when he went to Vegas for that, 2 weeks or something?
Yeah.
Just in the middle of the season, she had no idea the season was going on. He was one of my favorite things about the documentary. And I'll say this about The Last Dance. It was amazing TV. Like, to be quite honest, I didn't have my expectations super high. I knew it was going to be interesting, but 10 hours on any one subject, it was phenomenal. But I've got one criticism, and this is going to sound like I'm nitpicking. You know, people who don't like the movie Departed just because of the final scene of the movie, The Departed is a great movie. I mean, it's not a perfect movie, but it's pretty close. But a lot of people hate that the final scene, after, of course, Damon gets his, is that the camera pans down, and what do you see running across the rail? It's the very final scene of the movie.
The rat.
The rat. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people thought for such a perfect movie, it was an unbelievably corny ending. Like, oh, I get it. He was a rat. Oh, you showed a rat. That's what The Last Dance was. Like, The Last Dance was borderline perfect through the whole thing. And then the whole final wrap-up where they show, like, Michael Jordan, like, sitting down, looking out into the distance, and like, yep, that's been my life. They picked the corniest Pearl Jam song.
How could they have ended it? How else could they have ended it?
With a different effing song.
They had a great soundtrack.
The song is the problem. All right, the song is the problem, not the visual.
And no, it was like they couldn't resist. The sports nerds who made that could not resist putting the Jam in there. Like, they are the new Bruce Springsteen. It's like, dude, like sports rock. I love the Steen. Ooh, and they had to jam in Pearl Jam. And it wasn't even, and Pearl Jam's a good band, but it wasn't even like a good Pearl Jam song. And I saw people like fawning over it. It's like, oh man, the lyrics speak to me. It's about, you know, living life and looking back upon a life. No, it was corny as hell. It couldn't have been. And they, and I'm talking to you, they batted 1,000 up to that point on the music. Like, the music was excellent. Every montage, perfect. And they even were inspired. Things like taking a song off the Batman soundtrack that Prince did that wasn't Bat Dance.
Yes,
like, doing Party Man. I'm like, whoa, where did that come from? Like, really? And then they ended it. They couldn't resist. The sports nerds have this thing in their genetics where they have to put Pearl Jam in your face and worship the Jam. And it happened last night. I was like, oh. And this wasn't quite like, you know, running into the end zone and fumbling at the 1 yard line. That's not what it is at all. It's still amazing. It's excellent. But it was just one of those, you could have stuck the landing and you didn't. And you had to get the Jam. You couldn't resist. And it pissed me off so bad. I'm like, oh man. Like, they could have even picked a Pearl Jam song that worked, but this was like a corny, like super like vetery, like where the chords don't even like flow. Mm-hmm. Like, every once in a while they just let like, what's his name? Vetter Noodle. And they say, oh, it's a song. No, it's not. It's crap notes all over the place. And it's him just baseball. It was just the worst. They couldn't have fumbled the ending any worse than they did. And it sucked because the whole thing was great. And it doesn't ruin it. It's not like Lost. It's not like how the ending ruins everything. It was phenomenal TV.
I'm looking at the album right now, guys, on Spotify, and it's like, you know, it's got like the Wu-Tang Clan and Diddy and Coolio.
Dude, it's great.
And then Pearl Jam. Don't get me wrong, Pearl Jam's a great band, but song sucks.
But the song that they did, it sucks. So you saw it, so you felt the same thing I did.
Oh my God, the only thing I could think of. I'm like, you mean to tell me that they just went through my whole childhood and that's the song they're ending it with? Yeah. You know what I mean?
And I don't even think that there's like a connection between Michael Jordan and Pearl Jam. Now, I've seen pictures.
Wait, Eddie Vedder is a Cub fan, correct?
Yeah, ooh, I don't
know. There you go.
Someone's going to say, hey, he was at the Cubs, blah, blah, blah. And I know that there is a pretty funny story that involves Dennis Rodman. I guess at one point, Rodman and Vedder, like, flew to Vegas to go see Jane's Addiction and didn't tell anybody or something. That's kind of funny.
All right.
Which is, of course, once again, Rodman needs his own documentary. I would watch it. I would savor it. I would love every moment of it. But you can't get the guy to sit still for more than 3 hours. And we talked to the Jason Hare, who did that thing. Yeah. He did a great job. But, I mean, that was just, like, you couldn't have – how can you miss out? Like – you knew the entire time there'd have to be a final scene and you picked the Jam because it's in your genetics as a sports guy to have to shove Pearl Jam in your face. Oh, it was just, it was such a corny ending to such a great documentary.
I don't know. I thought Leonardo DiCaprio, I do think Leonardo DiCaprio is the coolest dude, but the whole Romeo and Juliet line in there, like, I was out on that. I'm sorry. I know it was big at the time, but, like, nope, out.
But the way he looked up at Jordan during that one quick scene, like, Jordan was a god. I mean,
We got a break. All right. We'll headlines, and then we'll be back. We got something we got to talk about.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.